Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Decorating Pages is a podcast dedicated to taking you behind the scenes of the designs of your favorite TV shows and films. Each episode, I'll be sharing design stories from some of Hollywood's most famous sets, interviews from set decorators, production designers, directors, and actors about creating the look of TV and film, about their design inspirations, and stories that take sets from page to screen. Hello, and welcome to Decorating Pages Podcast. I am Kim Wanup, your host. And if you can believe it, it is season 7 of this podcast. I can't believe it. If anyone's just starting to listen into this, it's been awesome to be a part of this. And did a hell of a job last season. I did 50 episodes last year, which I still can't believe. And getting off to a slow start this year, I must say, because it's the first episode of this year. But I've been busy. I've been pretty lucky, this year. I am a set decorator and I am currently working on a show. I've been working since the end of the writer's strike on a half-hour comedy for Netflix called Unstable. And then I got lucky and went right into a half-hour comedy for Netflix, Universal. And it's currently called, Classic Spy. And I'm back with the producers and writers from Parks and Rec, and it's kind of like going home. The designer and even like makeup and costume and scripty, and it's awesome. It's really an amazing feeling, especially after everything that has happened in the past year with the strikes and everything, to get back to working with people you are so comfortable with and you admire and you gel with so well. It's just so nice. And I actually tried to give my producer a hug at one point just to say thank you for, I don't know, for us all being there. It just feels so nice. And I know that I'm lucky to be in that situation and to be working, because I know it's not back to normal. And I don't really know what our normal is anymore. I don't know if it's going to get back to the craziness that it was after COVID, where it just went like balls out. And I don't know. I think maybe because of the looming IATSE strike and Teamster strike, there was a hell of a turnout at the rally this past weekend. So if anything of that is a inkling of how strong our unions are and how serious we are of, you know, the fairness of things that we are going to be fighting for in these negotiations, I think it's pretty eye-opening that we want to be treated as fairly as everybody else. And so I hope that negotiations, which started, I believe, this week or today, tomorrow, I hope they go well, because I don't want to go on strike. I don't know anyone who wants to go on strike, but I know a lot of people who will, because we did it for the writers and we did it for the actors, so you have to do it for yourself. But nobody wants to go on strike, I'll tell you that right now. But let's talk about more pleasant things. Let's do a little recap of some awards, because that's what we're all here for, right? Let's award ourselves. This coming weekend is the Oscars. And a couple things, you know, the SDSA, the Set Decorator Society of America, usually does a panel every year with the nominees. And they are doing it this year at the Egyptian on March 9th at 3 p.m., if anybody wants to go. and they will be discussing the nominees. Now, they're also streaming it, I think for the first time. I don't know if you have to be a member to be able to live stream it or not, so I'm unsure about that. I'm sure that they have info on the website, but you can live stream that event. So it's the Art of Production Design, sponsored by Variety, March 9th at 3 p.m. It's at the Egyptian. It's moderated by Thomas Walsh, production designer, and Jen Pascal, set decorator. So yeah, that's admission is free. Seating is first come, first serve. 2 p.m. arrival is recommended. So there is that. And then there is also the Oscars has a panel, which is a production design panel, Wednesday, March 6th. So that's tonight. At 7 p.m. at the Academy on Wilshire, and tickets are $10. And you can see all of the people there. I think it's, I guess it's everyone. It's from all of the nominees, I believe. Barbie, Killers of the Flower Moon, Napoleon, Oppenheimer, and Poor Things. So I've been really pulling for Barbie because I just think it's something, it pushes the envelope, but so does Poor Things. So I'm putting my money on Poor Things. That's just me. But let's talk about winners who have already won. So the SDSA winners, the best achievement for contemporary was Saltburn. The period went to Poor Things. The fantasy and science fiction went to Barbie. Comedy or a musical went to Asteroid City. So that was their things. And then the Art Directors Guild, which, spoiler here, I lost. I'm not bitter at all. I lost to The Last of Us, and that was a really good show, so I can't be too bad. Okay. I went to the ADG Awards. It was fantastic to see people. There's a lot of people who won, who you can hear on this podcast. So I was really happy to see a lot of people who I had interviewed. So let's get into that. The winners for that for 1 hour period went to The Great. 1 hour fantasy should have been For All Mankind. No, just kidding. Went to The Last of Us. You can hear John Pano on this podcast. 1 hour contemporary went to Secession. Television movie series went to Beef. Half hour went to Reservation Dogs. You can hear Brandon Toner Connolly on this podcast. Multicam went to Frasier. Variety went to Squid Game, The Challenge. Variety, the 80th Golden Globe Awards. Brian Stone Street won, which I interviewed him a couple years ago. You can listen to him talk about that. Commercials, they had a double winner. Apple, the new MacBook Pro, and Booking.com. Short form and music videos went to Taylor Swift, Ethan Taubman, you can hear him on here. Period feature went to Oppenheimer. Fantasy went to Poor Things. Contemporary went to Saltburn. Animated feature went to Spider-Man. So, kind of the same thing. Oh, I forgot. BAFTA went to Poor Things, I believe. I forgot to write that in here. But yeah, BAFTA went to Poor Things too. Poor Things kind of, I mean, it's beautiful. I mean, it is a beautiful thing. I didn't especially like the movie. I got some problems with the movie. It took me 2 times to actually, like, get through the movie. I couldn't quite get through it. So that, for me, was a thing. But it's beautifully done. So creative. The makeup was very disturbing to me. I don't know. So since I haven't done this podcast in 2 months, believe me, I kind of forgot how to do this. And to me, the hardest thing is writing, like, the intro to the person, because it just, to me, becomes so natural to talk to people at this point. But writing something is hard, and then doing the email for this is hard. If you are not on the email list, you can sign up at decoratingpagespodcast.com, and you can sign up there if you'd like, if you want, or you can just subscribe and forget about the email. I don't really know if anybody needs the email anymore, and I'm kind of debating whether to really do it anymore because I don't really like to do it. I don't I like people emailing me. I've gotten emails in the past couple months, and I believe me, it is so kind of anyone to take a minute out of their life to even acknowledge me that I am. It's so kind. So thank you so much for those encouraging words, anyone that has ever reached out, and even lately. So thank you for the encouragement in that. It's always appreciated. So what is Wanna watching? A hell of a lot. I have watched a lot in the last 2 months. I can't even get to into everything. So let's start with I watched all of Death and Other Details of who we're talking to today, James Philmont and decorator Alexander Rojek. Fantastically designed, and I thought it was a good series, good little mystery. Very well designed, as I said. And I always like Mandy Patinkin, and I liked it. I loved Capote and the Swans feud season two. Loved it. Next week we get to you get to hear Mark Ricker and Cherish Hale. Oof, that was amazing to talk to them. And that design blew me away. And I was obsessed with just everything about that show also. So that was fun. What else have I watched? I mean, so many movies I watch. Oh, TV wise, True Detective with that production designer is Daniel Taylor and Fabina Rizzi. Man, they did that, I think they said in like Iceland or Greenland. Iceland. Man, that looked cold. That looked like some cold location work, people. I don't think I'd be down for that one. I don't really know what that was about or how that ended. I know I loved watching Jodie Foster. I got some Clarice vibes. I just want more Jodie Foster in my life, but I don't know what was going on the show. So I'm gonna say not my favorite seasons of True Detective, but a lot of snow. A lot of snow there. The last season of Curb Your Enthusiasm, I'm watching. That production designer is David Matarana and Jill McGraw, set decorator. I love Curb Your Enthusiasm. I think they got real balls bringing Jeff Garland back out of like, because I kind of thought he was canceled. But then didn't they take him off the Goldbergs? Didn't he yell at people or something? I don't even remember. That's all. I don't even remember. But I thought he got canceled, and Curb's like, "Ah, screw it, we'll bring him back." So, movie wise, I just love watching old movies at this point. Things I haven't seen. The other night, I put on Charade with Audrey Hepburn. I had never seen that. That was beautiful. Oh, I watched that Kate Hepburn movie, Summertime, where she's in Venice. Oh God, was that stunning. Oh, the shots of Venice in the 50s was they just made me want to hop a plane. Oh my God. Really dumb story. I mean, she plays really hard to get with this guy. It's dumb. But God, Venice is fantastic. And then talk about another city. I watched Midnight Cowboy again, and I always thought Midnight Cowboy was like mid-70s. It's actually 1969. And New York is so gritty and dirty in that. It's such a great detail of like a study of New York City. I actually thought New York was dirtier in the 70s, but 1969 it was filthy too, I guess. But again, great film and, you know, great research if you need New York in the late 60s. Books that I have read, because my commute is horrific. I'm not gonna lie. It's 1 hour to 1.5 hours a day. So this is three hours a day I'm putting in. I cannot recommend enough Mommy Dearest. The 40th anniversary edition of Mommy Dearest by Christina Crawford is phenomenal. Joan Crawford was a crazy bitch. I don't care. You gotta read this. This woman, the clothes hangers was just the tip of the iceberg. She was putting this kid in the same outfit for months. These mind games she would play with these kids was unbelievable. And what's interesting about the 40th edition is You know, people always said this is her version of it and they didn't believe her. Well, she has testimony of people who corroborate her stories and, you know, say, like, I remember Christina wearing that dress or whatever. So it was interesting. It was also interesting now that I, you know, lived in L.A. and, you know, she was at the schools that she was in, or Palos Verdes school, and then she was in Flint Ridge, or like geographically, I know where she was. It's just crazy to me. And her mom was in Brentwood and couldn't come to see her for 2 years. It's crazy, crazy bullshit, crazy. And also made me like deep dive into just another Hollywood thing book called Tinseltown, where it is this murder mystery in the 30s of director William Desmond Taylor, and how he was killed. He lived down on like off of Alvarado, and it's this murder mystery that like swept Hollywood, and it's really good too. That was like a 13-hour book. It took me a week. No, I'm kidding. Tinseltown by William J. Mann. So I would recommend that one too. I don't know what I'm going to do next. I don't know. I've been listening to music. Then I go to music. After I do, then I got to, you know, get some 80s and 90s hip hop in there after that. So that's what I've been up to. What have you been up to? I hope you're working. I hope everybody's getting back to work. I really do. And I hope everybody is paying attention to what's going on with the strikes and just checking in and checking emails and stuff like that. But let's get to, in this episode, I speak to production designer James Philpott, who is behind Hulu's newest murder mystery series, Death and Other Details, starring Mandy Patinkin. The show's main set is a huge cruise ship that has an Art Deco design, and it sails into mystery. Ha ha ha. We talk about how he chose this Art Deco design for the ship and how the designing of the mystery is integrated into some of the clues in the sets, especially in the color. How he designed the cabins for these characters, but how they had to kind of be the same sets to save stage space. That makes sense. How using the bows of the stages as the bows of the ship, because, you know, got all that pipe. I know about pipe, I must say. And he talks about the gorgeous Art Deco details that he integrated into the set. So I loved watching the series. I thought it was super interesting and a very good murder mystery, I must say. So I hope you enjoy.
Well, we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
I mean,
who knows what our normal is at this point.
Exactly. We may have a new normal. So yeah. We'll find what that is.
I think the new normal is 8 episodes. I think it is.
I mean, I've been talking to people about shows that are only 6 episodes, which is like, okay, that's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, 8 episodes. I'm barely unpacking my office. You know what I mean?
Well, I know. And I mean, these 6 episode things, I mean, they're really 4 months total, like shoot everything. So it's crazy, but it is what it is.
Now with Death, how much prep did you have? Did you have a lot of prep?
We actually had a lot of prep on that one. I think we had 16 weeks, which for television is pretty generous.
Yeah.
I mean, having said that, the sort of the task that we were given was quite massive. So, I mean, and I think this is always the case with anything, is that you always want more.
You always want more.
Time is such a precious thing.
Yeah.
But we were given initially it felt like a lot of time. I mean, it didn't seem like a lot of time at the end of 16 weeks, but it was great. And but we did have to build an entire ship.
Yeah. I wonder too, when you're built, first of all, how many stages did you have to build the ship?
Well, I mean, we had three stage, like we had two proper stages, and then we had a very strange stage, which was like long and skinny and super tall. So I'd say three stages. And then we also did expand to outside. And then in some of the episodes, we even started working and filming in our HVAC rooms, our like our mechanical rooms.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Oh, I mean, you'll probably notice in, I think it was episode four, we started going into what was referred to as the bowels of the ship.
Yes, or
the
which I really liked.
That was our mechanical rooms in our stages.
Oh, that's fantastic. Because I have done a lot of work with like pipe. I just got off of like For All Mankind. We did a lot of pipe. So yeah. I appreciate any runs of pipe and like, oh, look at that. And look how they made a bend there. And like, so look, I mean, even though it might have been the same, I'm sure you enhanced and the lighting and everything you have to put in there.
Well, I mean, what we actually did in that particular case is because initially, we filmed at a location for part of the innards of the ship, and it was an old, like, decommissioned brewery, and it had all sorts of pipes and tanks and cool stuff. And I knew about this in advance of taking Death and Other Details. And I mean, I knew I had the show, and I was on a survey for another show, and I'm like, okay, I have to photograph this and remember this place. So we essentially started there, but then we needed to sort of carry along into more details and more specific builds. So then we went into the HVAC room into our stage, but I did have to do a lot of things to match the original location. Like the original location had red floors and it had a little bit more piping. So we did actually add quite a bit of lighting. We added, well, obviously painted the floor so it matched. We added, actually did add more pipes. So there's our pipes. Our pipes never go away. So we added more pipes. And we also built the sort of room where we find our Ukrainian refugees.
Yeah.
So that's why it was more important to do it on the stage, is because, and we knew that that might sort of span a couple blocks. So.
Oh, yeah. I should say, so I got the screeners, but they didn't give me 9 and 10. So I only watched till 8. So just, well, you know.
The screeners, I mean, I think that was on purpose. I mean, nobody got 9 or 10.
Oh, okay.
I haven't seen 9 or 10 either. I mean, obviously I know what happens.
Yeah.
They obviously didn't want people to know the ending, because the ending is quite shocking.
Yeah. Good.
Big twist.
Well, I got to 8 and I was like, wait, is this the ending? Are they just gonna keep murdering people? Like,
No. I mean it's actually quite a big twist and a big like moment. And I mean, that is dropping quite soon. I mean, I think you're probably gonna have the podcast after our finale, which is this coming Tuesday. So
well, we're not talking. I was just saying, like, I was thinking, since we're not going to talk about 9 and 10, I could put it up the day of, because we're not talking. I don't know what to talk about for 9 and 10.
We won't talk about 9 and 10, which some. So
because I don't know. I don't know what to bring up. So we can talk about up to 8.
Okay, let's do that. Let's make it keep it secret.
Yeah. And then we'll do a build up for the finale.
Yes. And I mean, I am going to say that people will be shocked, because I know one of my daughters follows Reddit, and I mean, all the conspiracy theories and all the different hypotheses of what's going to happen.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that Reddit is just lit up with all sorts of ideas, and most of them aren't right, which is going to be the part that's shocking.
That's good. I love that. I love when you know something the audience doesn't. It is so, and it's such a little secret that we all have. It's so great.
It is. And I mean, I have to say, I'm very excited to watch the finale. Even though I do know what happens, I found the show is very compelling. And I've now watched most of the episodes probably 3 times, because I too got the screeners. But then I've been watching it with my family and everybody talks about it. And so it's just, but every time I watch it, I still enjoy it as much as the first time, which I think is really really a good thing.
It's well written. It's a good pace. It's well written. It's a good show. It really is. I'm glad to have been able to watch it.
Well, it is a good show. I'm really proud of how it all turned out. I mean, obviously I'm interested in seeing how the finale turned out, because there was a lot of technical things that we had to do to produce the finale and not seeing it. Like, as you know, in your, what you do is like, you do all the work and you sort of see the dailies, but then until you see the final cut, you really don't know how it all meshed together. So that's one of the other reasons why I'm super excited for the finale.
It is exciting. It is. Let's go back to like design wise and the decision to make the boat, the deco, and the style of the boat and everything that you had to put into designing and that sort of process.
Well, I mean, I think the decision to make the boat deco kind of almost predated me a little bit, because our showrunners, Mike Weiss and Heidi Cole McAdams, they really were inspired by sort of a traditional Agatha Christie whodunit. Mm-hmm. And obviously, I mean, Agatha Christie being a British writer from the 1930s, I mean, that deco period was almost like kind of archetypical for her work.
Right.
I think it came to them. And then they sort of joined up with Mark Webb, who was the pilot director. And I think they all kind of had this idea that they wanted to do a sort of a locked room mystery on a boat, an ocean liner. And the deco was sort of the style they wanted to go with. But having said that, I mean, the show is contemporary. I mean, it is up to date. And I mean, obviously the way the language and various other elements like phones and things show that. But it was really very specific that we wanted to stay into the deco style. And even our costumer, and I'm going to give a little call out to Mandy Line, who did an amazing job.
Oh, yeah.
And I talk to Mandy all the time. I think we worked in such synergy, but a lot of her inspiration was also from the classic era of the deco. I mean, the sort of the Katharine Hepburns and people like that and the sort of the Coco Chanels and...
Yeah.
And it's just sort of, we just really kind of wanted to do this deco, but keep it, make sure everyone knows it was modern.
Yeah.
The other thing
it's
that
contemporary also, deco. It's contemporary
deco. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I did a lot of research on the real deco and ships and the various, these ocean liners. I mean, they're quite incredible. I mean, it's really almost worth just doing to get paid to do all this research.
I know. It's my favorite part.
Those, well, at mine too. Yeah. But those ships are incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, these ships would have all the ocean liner companies like in France and Britain and, you know, the Netherlands and all these different places. I mean, they'd almost compete with each other to make the most luxurious ships, and they would hire all the most famous designers of the time, and they would create all this art and that. And so it was such a joy to see all that stuff. And so when we started working on the show, I was able to really tap into that. And also in the pilot, which I kind of came to it after the pilot, they had the opportunity of using the Queen Mary, which is the obviously down in, I think it's Long Beach California. And so that was sort of, that is a part of the deco ship.
Right.
So that became a sort of a seminal starting point. I mean, it wasn't the end point, but it was the starting point. So that was also kind of where that came from.
Was it shot in Vancouver?
The series was shot in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. There was a pilot that was done in Los Angeles. And then there was a chunk of it that was reshot because of... different like twists of storylines, actor availability, and all sorts of things. So I probably ended up doing probably almost a third of the pilot again.
Well, that's what I was gonna say. Did they have to ship the walls or did you rebuild?
We rebuilt sections of the pilot. I mean, there was only a couple sets that we actually moved forward with. So I think it was a bit of hallway and a suite was what I kind of ended up rebuilding, and everything else I designed.
One of the things that catches me is the richness and darkness of all of the walls and all of the horizontal, the gold detail that you have in there. And I was going to bring up that it brings out the costume so much. And it really works so seamlessly together. And then the lighting inside the hallways and everything. And a lot of DPs or even showrunners, when you say dark, I want this to be a dark room, they're like, no, no, no. So did you have kickback from that or?
A little bit. I mean, yeah. There was a moment because I initially talked to our DP, and I mean, obviously, as you know, when you work with new DPs, you really do have to have some pretty strong and very important conversations with them about how they light, what they like in terms of backgrounds, in terms of skin tones and things like that. And, you know, obviously the always question, what do you think about white?
Yeah, it's always.
But I think it's really important to have those conversations because every DP has a different take on it. So. Yeah. Anyways, I mean, what the sort of initial seminal conversation is that our DP, he said he likes his backgrounds to be slightly like three steps down from the skin tone of the actor.
Hmm.
So I use that as a starting point. And one of my sort of favorite sets was Sunil's office, which I went quite dark with because our actor is East Indian and he has, well, he's British East Indian, but he has a, you know, a darkish complexion. So I said, okay, I want to go dark here because obviously it gives the ability for the actor to move forward in the scene in terms of visually. And also I just thought it has a sophisticated quality, but I know at one point there was a bit of pushback because the other factor in our show is it does have a sort of a lighthearted spirit to it. So I think there was a fear that it would become too dark, and there was also color was super important in our show, that it wasn't going to be like, well, I think one of I heard once the show's not a gray show, which I mean it's definitely not a gray show, but I think initially when, as you say, producers hear the word dark, they do get a bit frightened. So there was a little bit, but I think we were able to sort of move forward with it quite quickly. And I mean, I know that now that the showrunners are just over the moon on how lush and beautiful Point Dark actually made the show.
Well,
and as you say, it popped the costumes and furniture too. I mean, a lot of the sort of velvets and the greens and the pastel pinks and, you know, taupes and things just really can move with the darkness.
Yeah, I thought it was wonderful. I think too, sometimes when you say dark, they don't understand the opportunities that it opens up for lighting, or like you said, like to have lighter furniture and things. When they are down in the bottoms of the boat and they find that wall of electronics and all the servers and everything, and that blue is just coming in on them. It's gorgeous.
Cool. Yes. And I mean, that was something that was actually really important, is the blue. And I mean, this is a bit of a spoiler, maybe.
Not,
I mean, blue
don't.
Very, a big color.
Blue is a big color. All right.
Like there's a code to it.
Okay. Well, I like that. I like that teaser. I'm in.
That's a teaser. I mean, there was a reason it was blue.
Mm. No, that's it. I love as a decorator, I get to do all these fancy things like upstairs, and then downstairs we do all this grittiness. Did you build all of those little rooms down there, like the jail and like this, the hallway?
So we built the downstairs hall, obviously, with that where we find the servers, smashing the walls. The security room was a room that I redesigned from the pilot. But the cabins were a new design. The jail was a new design, and it was all built on the stage.
And then up top, I think the most magnificent set is the deck with the bar. I mean, that's your, this is where we put our money, right?
Put our money in a few spots.
Yeah.
But yes, one of them for sure.
Or at least green. At least Grips put their money in there, putting up, I'm sure, big blue screens. Was it a surround? Like, how did you do that?
I mean, it was in sound stages, so I would. I mean, there was a little bit of visual effects help.
Oh, of course, of course. And wind machines, not too much, but wind machines.
I mean. one of the pool deck was actually physically outside, so sometimes they didn't have to have wind machines, if you know what I mean.
Oh, so you built it outside of the stage, or no?
The pool was outside the stage.
Pool was outside the stage. Oh, cool.
Yeah. Well, so it benefited from having natural light for sure. And but yeah, I mean, those were like the decks were really where we put a lot of money. I mean, the bar, like the inside dining room and the bar was like a really beautiful set that we.
Oh, yeah.
That I think really kind of just upped the idea of this luxurious ship. But I mean, there were a lot of interesting sets, like all the different suites we had put together. I mean, they were all, every suite was different and every suite had its own sort of furniture scheme attached to it. And so there was, there was definitely an effort there.
A lot of sets. And then for the Collier House.
Yes.
So I'm assuming that was a location, but then did you build that playroom?
No, we actually, the Collier House was a complete location. But what was interesting is that it was actually a combination of two houses. The interior of the Collier House, which was the hallway, the staircase, the playroom, and the study, Lawrence's study, was a location, a beautiful period house in Vancouver that had this incredible, I mean, particularly Lawrence's office, these crazy like Art Nouveau wallpapers. And we dressed it from scratch. I mean, this house is preserved, but it's preserved empty of any scrap furniture. So it gave us a great opportunity because obviously it had really beautiful bones. Then we also had the exterior house, which was a different house, where we have the scenes where, you know, the children are running up to the house. And then we augmented it because we wanted it to be slightly different. There was a little bit of visual effects help that I designed, a sort of French Norman house that we did. And then what we also had to do was, based on some rough designs, the different houses, we built the dollhouse to match.
Oh, yeah. That was one of my questions, too. To me, there's an unsettling feeling of disproportion and scale in that room. Like, there's that giant teapot, and you have the giant dollhouse and everything. And I was wondering, design-wise, was that a decision purposefully, or like, was that playful? Like, what went into
it? It was more for a playful aspect to it, because obviously one of the sort of the things in the show is things are not what they seem. And there is sort of like a definitely different play on proportion and different perceptions. And I mean, obviously later in the, I think it's episode 7, where there's almost like the stream of consciousness episode.
Oh, yeah.
There is a play on proportion where we have like our adult characters wearing clothes that we've seen them wear as a child. Right. So, I mean, in a play that's kind of flowed through the whole show.
Yeah.
And also the idea too is that when you first see the house, you think it's a house and then it cracks open and it's a dollhouse. So, I mean, there's definitely a lot of sort of brain teasing in that environment.
I don't know who exactly, but I think there's like 4 decorators on IMDb for the show. Did you have like different decorators for different episodes or no?
No, I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, I had a single decorator for the full 9.5 episodes that we did. Alex Royick, who's I worked with a lot, and I just adore, and we kind of share a brain. So Alex was, I'm going to say, was the decorator for the show.
Yeah, I don't know. Sometimes it's like, you know, assistant decorators and everything, and sometimes IMDb doesn't have that box or whatever it is, so you never know. So I was like, I don't know. Did they do? Because I think that that's kind of where shows are going in a sense. You got 2 DPs. You should have 2 decorators. Some shows, I mean, I don't know. I've been on shows where I've had that because it's too much. It's a lot.
I mean, I'm not going to disagree with it's a lot. I mean, a show, like a lot of shows, I mean, it is a lot, particularly with the decorating and the design.
Yeah,
I mean, design. Have 2 art directors. Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. But in this case, it was a single through line with a single decorator.
Nice. And then as Did you shoot in blocks or did you shoot one at a time? Did you?
We shot in blocks of two.
Two. Yeah, that's kind of how it is now, which I like. I kind of like because it makes it go faster.
Well, it's interesting because it makes it go faster in one way, but it also, I mean, it gives us more prep, which I also, because I mean, doing episodic television where it's single and you have like 8 days of prep, whereas this gives you like, you know, 15 to 16 days of prep, and it gives you a little bit more time to sort of sort your stuff out.
Yeah.
And think about it and ponder it. And I mean, not that in television you have time to ponder too much, but you know, you have a bit of moment to reflect on what you're doing and just say, okay, this is the right thing to do.
I'm actually shooting in blocks on a half hour comedy, which is nice because I've done a lot of half hour comedy and it's like every Monday, new episode. That's a killer. That's
like... I mean, I can see that. I mean, I haven't done half hour. I mean, I know sometimes when I'll do a show, I mean, normally it's an 8 day series, but I mean, I have had to do some 7 days. And I mean, now that we're, and I don't know if they do this in LA, but they do this thing called tandem where they overlap two units. Like,
oh yeah, we have double up days. That's what we call them.
I mean, I've been now experienced where you have a 7 day show and then they do two double up days. So essentially it becomes a 5 day episode. So it's like, yeah. So having it in blocks like that one, that you almost have to have it as blocks because at least it gives you 10 days of prep.
Yeah. While you're shooting though.
Yes, while you're shooting.
That's good. It's not a hiatus like we used to have.
There's
no more of that.
No, I think that's a thing of the past.
Yeah. Oh, I know. In designing these different rooms on the boats, did you have, I mean, I know you can describe the walls and how they were kind of the same with that linear piece, but were there other details specifically that you designed into the rooms?
Yes. As just sort of referencing the suites, I mean, we basically ended up building three suites. But one of the suites we actually used quite a bit. And I built what I kind of call it a Lego set suite, where I built a structure and it was four interconnected rooms, but it was basically the structure was the posts and the ceiling. And I had a situation where then we could swap the walls out. So exterior walls with portholes or patio doors. But the other thing that I would design is I designed a series of different like kind of bars. They drink a lot, rich people.
Yeah. So, yeah. And bars. And sing.
So, I mean, yes, exactly. So we had things where we would have a bar that I would design, that I would move around in different suites. In Lawrence's study, we built in bookshelves, which was unique to that. In Anna's suite, we had specific vanity that I built into that, and then obviously different beds. So we had a Lego kit of parts, but then what I would do was have specific elements that would be specific to certain sets that would not be appear in other sets of the suites. And then every suite we had a different dressing scheme. So I'd work with Alex and we would come up with like a color palette for the furniture for, you know, this suite versus that suite, different drapery and whatnot. So it was definitely every suite had elements that were unique to that particular room.
I love Anna's. I love that huge room, that because you get so much depth in that room.
Well, that was part of what I tried to do in a lot of the sets, is because these rooms I interconnect, so you could always have kind of a through line through the different rooms. I mean, that's something I love doing, where like, especially if you're designing sort of more intimate spaces, to make it have scale, you kind of suggest there's more spaces beyond.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's gorgeous. I was saying like the drapery for every room is like fantastic. The drapery. Yeah. I love drapery. Fantastic. That's
why my decorator Alex, she's from originally from Vienna. So she likes to get things from Europe a lot. So a lot of the fabrics were brought in. So
oh, fantastic. Maybe after we're done, you can tell me the budget. I can't imagine, like, just that, because there's such rich textures, and I'm sure the reupholstering and drapery, like, And I mean, you have fabric on walls too. Is it fabric on wall? Like where the guy gets killed? Is that
was actually wall? Wallpaper.
That's wallpaper. I
mean, and that was the other thing we did do is we had sort of panels where we would have different murals and things because that was really common in the Art Deco period. So we would have different walls with like, it wasn't fabric, but it was wallpaper that would suggest these murals. But yeah.
I also loved when you did the sets like in flashbacks and everything, and Rufus's office I thought was fantastic. Just like a
lot of fun with.
That's awesome.
Because what we tried to do was because obviously the whole vibe of the show has this sort of like classic detective vibe to it. So I really leaned into the sort of the whole era of the gumshoe, the classic 1930s movie of the detective. And I sort of architecturally structured the room so that it would have those elements like this sort of curved top window at the end, you know, the sort of separation from the bedroom, which had almost like sort of like the 1930s office partition walls with the glass in it. And then I started looking at just different textures that they would have in the period. I mean, often, obviously, I was looking at a lot of black and white pictures, but like big Czech tile floors and, you know, striped wallpapers and that. And I just kind of almost, I just had a lot of fun playing with that, but then twisting up with different furniture that was not of the period. Like we went to furniture from the 90s.
Yeah.
So we put that into a room that was obviously has a very 1930s vibe. So that was super fun.
Yeah. Because usually 90s furniture is not too much fun.
No, it's not. And I mean, I do think there was a little bit of sort of 1960s modern stuff in there. But I think with the 90s furniture in counter to a 1930s.
It worked. Oh, it definitely worked. Yeah. And the 90s have so many vibes, but it works with playing off of that great architecture that you created. It was really well done. Really well done. I loved it.
I mean, that was a really fun set to do.
Did Mandy like it?
I think so. I mean, because of my work schedule with the next episodes, I don't spend a time on set, so
I usually hear from the onset.
I usually take it if I don't hear complaints.
Yes,
good. I mean, the only thing that I ever heard from Mandy, I mean, I know he was very particular about chairs and comfortable chairs, and which is very reasonable. So I mean, there was one set we often, when we knew Mandy was going to sit in a chair, we would bring several options of chairs to that would work with the set, that then hopefully one of them will work with him. So but we never had any problems, so I'm gonna say yes, he was happy.
That is the thing though, of like, and you never really, I always thought in the beginning of my career, like, this is so weird, like, shouldn't we be talking to the actors about their character and getting the influence and everything? And then I had a situation where I did that, and then I was like, oh, you don't. No. But
I know I did that once, and I mean, I sort of decided that wasn't the best idea.
No.
I mean, and also we also have to realize the sort of vision of the show is coming from a showrunner.
Yeah.
And actors have opinions, but I think where, you know, we can kind of address all the opinions and sort of likes and wants of the actors often comes in the props department.
Right.
I mean, relationship with the actors is so much stronger.
Yeah.
They're dealing with the personals, the watches, the rings, the, you know, little notebooks, and all sort of, the actor has sort of a quirk they want to sort of express. Often they'll ask for specific props. So I feel that that's where you kind of get that. And if you work with your props master very closely, which I do, you get a lot of information from them of what the actors are interested in.
Right. And costumes. I get a
lot of costumes too.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And man, as I said, Mandy Lyon was great. And, you know, we had a really great relationship. So yeah, costumes is really important.
Yeah. I, on the show I'm currently on, the costume is everything, more so than the environment of giving these people the personality. So I keep going over, I'm like, so what's Florence into? Like, what's Helen into? Like, and they're giving me more of a vibe than even the character breakdowns that we got, because now it's, you know, it's real now. Now they're cast and they're everything. So, and And the other thing is, as a, especially for you as a designer, you're on way before an actor. You know what I mean? Yeah. You're developing this world with the showrunner, with the producer, with the director, way longer before the actor gets there. And that's something like in the beginning of my career, I knew but didn't understand. But
that's interesting, because that is true. And I mean, sometimes you have an idea of what this character is in your head, and then sometimes you'll get like the actor will be cast and you're like, oh,
yeah,
okay.
It's not
yes. That person. And then you almost have to readapt your ideas.
Yep.
And I mean, I do. And also sometimes they do present challenges too when the actors show up, because there's situations where you don't really know what the actor's going to look like. And so, I mean,
it affects. Yeah,
exactly. I mean, the thing that I was thinking, I did like really early in my career, I did a pilot for a hospital procedural, and our showrunner wanted like this hospital to be very warm and blonde wood and very kind of beautiful and like that way. And then they cast Mamie Gummer, Meryl Streep's daughter, and then suddenly it's like, oh my god, her hair is the same color as the walls. And our DP at that time was so clever, and he actually made it into an asset versus, but at first you're like, okay, what are we going to do? And then, but it did present a challenge, but it also had a really great solution. But yeah, those are things that kind of are interesting, because you don't know who you're going to get.
Yeah.
Often.
It is. It's kind of a weird process in that sense of like, well, that one time even, you know, you put in photos of families, and then I got there, I didn't know who the actor was, and it was a completely wrong skin tone. I was like, get all of the frames out of here right now. Whoops.
Yeah, I mean, that's also, yeah, that's the whole thing, is like when you're trying to personalize, and then when you, especially, I mean, I guess for seasons and pilots, I've done a lot of pilots. I mean, sometimes the people don't cast like until the night before. Like sometimes they'll be flying in and they'll arrive at the airport, go right to costumes and show up on set. And nobody's seen them except for obviously the people who picked them.
Yeah. Yeah. Didn't give us a heads up. I know that we're not on the priority list of that. At least I'm not.
No, I mean, sometimes costumes just gets a list of sizes and say this person's coming in, they'll be here in like 3 hours. Yeah. So yeah,
the episode which I is the last one that I watch, episode 8, yes, is the lights go out, and
yes,
I've also done where it's like lights are out and it's the three wick candles and everything, but design wise I know there you were mostly in sets that had already shot. But did you have to adjust anything for the shots that were dark?
We didn't really adjust anything in terms of set dressing. I mean, obviously we did develop a kind of emergency lighting scheme which had a blue cast to it, which of course leads to that whole blue mystery that we were talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. We did sort of add the candles into a couple sets, and then the dining room where we added quite a lot of candles. But in terms of changing actual architectural elements or particular dressing, we didn't really have to do that because I think the sets had been established so well. And I mean, the lighting, not only the lighting that we added, but through candles and this sort of emergency lighting concept, but just the way the DOPs lit the show, I think it just ended up being beautiful anyways. So it didn't really need too much adjustment.
Yeah, I thought it was beautiful when it was dark too, just to give the little glows here and there and little lanterns they even had. I think the funnier part is like, oh, you're reading like episode 8 and you're like, emergency lights, come on. And you're like, do we have emergency lights? Like, do we?
Well, I mean, that was the whole thing, because I mean, we kind of knew we had to have emergency lights eventually.
Right. Oh, well, that's a good tip.
At the beginning, we started looking at what real emergency lights look like, and they're quite awful and ugly and institutional. And we just said, you know what? I mean, we're not going to put these things into our sets. I mean, we don't want to wreck our sets by putting these lights in. And so we did have a cove lighting system that we had from the very beginning. And so we kind of almost said, okay, what we would do is a concealed emergency lighting, and this cove lighting would turn into emergency lighting as need be.
Yeah.
Just because it was really important to keep that really gorgeous, beautiful, high-end aesthetic through the whole show.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, a white two-headed light from Home Depot, I didn't really cut it.
Yeah. Well, sometimes you want reality, and sometimes reality is so ugly you can't.
Yeah. And I mean, I feel that this this show is a heightened show. I mean, it does have a sort of a heightened quality to it that is everything has a stylized quality to it. So I don't think having sort of your realistic industrial lighting was really the right thing to do.
Yeah, no. I mean, I think it was seamless when the lights went out and it was all, you know, and then like the moonlight outside, but you still had some little fixtures out there. And it's something to be said when your sets look great in the dark.
Yes. And I mean, I have to say that the whole concept of dark lighting, I did the series The 100 for a long time, and that was where I kind of really learned about how you deal with lighting with no power, right? And how, and oftentimes it would be, you know, in the dark. So it sort of, it is a bit of a brain tease, but it's something, you know, I've had experience with.
You had a long run on Smallville and a long run on The 100. Is that just the two?
Yes.
Yeah. I like a long run. I can't seem to get it anymore.
I like the long run. I mean, obviously, I mean, it would be lovely to have a long run on something soon.
Yeah.
But I also really enjoy the opportunities of doing different things too.
Yeah.
One of the things that was actually beneficial when I was on The 100 is because it was a shorter season, I had a lot of opportunities to do pilots, which is really great because it sort of gives you the ability to build all these worlds. And then, you know, you could choose to go back to, a long run show, or you could choose to do the pilot if it went to series. But it just gives a little bit of diversity and also just the sort of a creative palette cleanser.
Yeah.
I mean, I do also love the opportunity that I've had to do Death and Other Details. I mean, I would love if it got a second season. I mean, like, sort of pray to the pickup gods that might happen.
Yeah. Pray to the Hulu gods.
The Hulu gods, yes. I mean, we'll see what happens. I mean, I think, well, everyone has their fingers crossed, so we'll see.
It's a good show in a sense, too, where it has the ability to go many seasons. It doesn't have to be about her. It could just, you know, I don't know what the ending is, but yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, as another teaser for the last two episodes, I mean, there is a twist at the end that keeps it open.
Yeah. Well, that's good. But then the whole boat didn't blow up and everybody went down with the Titanic. That's good.
Hey, that would be a secret.
Yeah.
I'm going to just say you'll be shocked.
Yeah. Oh, I'm excited. Well, thank you for meeting with me and everything. I loved the show. I loved looking at it. I think it's just a phenomenal job and made, you know, boring ships into something very interesting and beautiful. So
thank you. And it was great that we had a chance to chat. And I'm curious on what your show is because I want to look out for it when it comes out.
Well, I'm doing, it's half hour Netflix, Ted Danson comedy with the producers from Parks and Rec who I've worked with for a couple times. So it's nice. It's kind of like coming home. Like it's like same makeup people, same scripty, same camera guys. Like
it's, well, in our business, often it's all about these sort of interconnections.
Yeah, it's great.
Interesting because I was doing a lot of the writers from Death and Other Details were from The 100.
That's great.
And then I did this Canadian show and one of the main actors was from The 100 as well. So it's just all these sort of things tie together. So it's interesting.
It's nice when that happens. And it's nice when it's the right, when it's people you're excited to see.
Exactly. Oh, yes. You have to be
excited. Sometimes you work with a lot of people and you're like, oh, it's that guy. It could go either way. But
exactly.
As long as we're there, it doesn't, you know, make it right.
That's it. And, you know, you have to surround yourself with really great people like immediately. So, I mean, and you know, in our departments, you have the ability to create your own team. So as long as you be able to have your people that you like.
How many times have you worked with Alex?
Alex, I've done, she did the 100 with me. She did Death and Other Details. And I think we did 3 pilots together.
Wow. That's a good run. You got your small talk down.
Oh yeah. Like, I mean, as I kind of joke, like, we almost share a brain now. So, which makes things so much nicer.
Yes. Well, congratulations to her too. It looks fantastic. So hope it gets recognized. Let's put it that way.
I do too. I mean, I mean, we have been getting a fair amount of positive buzz about the look of the show. I mean, I think that there are people who really love the show.
Yeah.
I hope more people show up, and I mean, hopefully the numbers will be good, and we'll get some recognition. I mean,
yeah,
I think the show does deserve recognition because, I mean, everyone did such a good job.
Yeah, it's really beautiful. Great job. And thank you for meeting me, for talking with me on a Saturday. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. No problem. All right.
Awesome. So nice to meet you, and have fun in Vancouver up there.
Yes. And maybe one day if you come up to Vancouver or vice versa, we'll be able to see each other.
Yes. I owe you a drink for doing this. Coffee. Yes.
Okay.
I'll
accept that.
So thank you. Take care.
Okay. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
I just love always hearing about how much prep, how much time we had, how much money, you know, time and money. That's all I really want to hear about with people. And I know no one ever really wants to tell me how much money they had. And I never really ask off air or whatever. But I'm always interested about how much money everybody gets. But yeah, God, it's such a rich looking show. I mean, if you just catch it and just look at some of the screenshots, it's a really, really great looking show. I think the production designer, James, and the set decorator, Alexandra, did just a fantastic job. And I'm glad I got to watch all of it. So thank you, James, for giving me that time, and great job. So next week, Mark Ricker and set decorator Cherish Hale for Capote versus the Swans. So you have a week to watch that. And God, it's great. I watched it like almost twice. I watched each episode almost twice. Everyone. I love it. I'm kind of obsessed with Capote. Not gonna lie. I read that book, if you know. I read that over last summer just to prep for Feud. Because I knew it was coming, so I read the book early. I knew it. So that interview is next week. And also, I still have the film study coming up. I still have a lot of those coming up. I just got too busy at the end of last year with all of those great interviews. And so I still have like 4 or 5, I think I might have 5 or 6 coming up to come out. So they're going to come up at the end of the month, I think. I'm just going to spread them out. So you still have all those to look forward to. So I hope you got an earful. I'm Kim Wanup for Decorating Pages.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.